Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Fearscape Media Network is your new home for everything weird and enlightening. Check out podcasts and YouTube shows covering content from discussions on horror films to the paranormal to meditation. Find out more at fearscapemedia.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Unsensitive, a show where we take a subject, talk with an expert, and break it down with questions that might be normally too impolite to ask. I'm your host, Ray Robinson, and recently I was surfing Facebook and I saw a meme that talked about how the job that you hate right now that you have is a blessing to somebody without a job at all. And having known plenty of people that dislike their job and they feel like it's a necessary evil, but especially at a time when unemployment is really high right now because of COVID-19, it just kind of seemed logical to me. But is it really that cut and dry? Is job satisfaction really a luxury? Well, today's guest, headhunter and career coach Simon Lader, is prepared to give us a little bit of a different perspective on this. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ray. Thanks very much for having me on.
So now tell us a little bit. We specifically came to this conversation where you brought up the fact that job satisfaction is not a luxury. It can be something that could be expected from your job. So tell me, how do you kind of get to that point of view, like from somebody that is working a job currently with that mindset of I'm only doing this because it's what I do to make money. It's not something that I truly enjoy.
Okay, and that's a really great question. So let's just put some facts out there that they'll be the basis of to think this forward. Okay, so first off, most people think, well, I do an 8-hour day, 8 hours of part of a 24-hour day. So what difference does it make whether or not I'm happy or not for a third of my day? All right, Who cares, right? But here's the truth. Okay, even assuming that we're just talking about an 8-hour workday, 9 to 5, okay? Most people, when they start work, they're not actually starting work at 9 o'clock. When you wake up in the morning, you take a shower, you get dressed, you're getting dressed for the most part into your work clothes, okay? Whether you're in a suit and you're working in the city or whether you're in overalls, it doesn't matter. Most people, when they get up in the morning, they get dressed into their work clothes and they start thinking about the job ahead of them. They start thinking about the day. So for at least an hour before the start of their job, they're in work mode, all right? Now let's get through the rest of their 8-hour day. And then even if they work from home, the likelihood is that for at least an hour after they finish working, they're decompressing. They're kind of organizing their thoughts about the day they've just had, okay? And if they have a commute or a drive home or they're on the train, the bus, whatever it is, they're still in work mode for at least an hour at the end of their day, all right? So that 8-hour day we traditionally think of, you're in work mode for at least 10 hours, okay? Now, you come home, maybe have something to eat, do a couple of chores, and then when you actually start your leisure activity, that's probably only about 3 hours, okay? So, you know, if you think about lockdown notwithstanding, by the time people get home and they've had something to eat or, you know, done whatever they need to do, and then maybe they go to a bar, go hang out with friends, watch Netflix, whatever it is, you're looking realistically at a maximum maybe 3 hours. So from the moment you wake up on a Monday morning to the moment you're to sleep on a Friday night, if you add up all of those waking hours, the likelihood is for every 1 hour of you doing something you want to do, you're spending 3 hours doing something that you're being paid to do, okay? So just in terms of waking hours, for every 1 hour that you're doing your own leisure activity, 3 hours is you working, all right? Now, I saw a study towards the end of last year that said almost 80% of Americans, when asked, admitted they were not happy in their jobs. Okay? And again, lockdown notwithstanding, at the moment, depression, suicide, anxiety are at an all-time high. Okay? And this was even not including that. I mean, even pre-lockdown, the statistics were climbing higher and higher and higher. Okay? And if you think about it, if for most of the day, somebody is occupied by an activity that they are not happy with, is it any surprise that 4 out of 5 Americans who have said they're not happy in their job, that spills into the fact that we've got anxiety, depression, and suicide rates at an all-time high? Okay. Mm-hmm. The connection is almost too obvious to ignore. Okay. So when you asked me earlier, is job satisfaction a luxury, or is it just, you know, or should it be a necessity? My perspective is very, very simple. Okay. Your overall health is a combination of your physical and your mental well-being. Okay. And how happy you are is an intrinsic element in your mental well-being. And I'm not talking about people who are unfortunately clinically depressed and need medication. I'm not talking about people like that. I'm talking about people who otherwise would, you know, given the opportunity, would be leading a happy life. Okay. And we know from almost endless studies that the 3 primary reasons for suicide, nervous breakdowns, and depression are bereavement, or a breakdown in a marriage, or a breakdown in a working relationship. Okay. I.e., people who unfortunately are suffering a bereavement, or they have a toxic relationship with a spouse, or a toxic relationship with their employer. Okay. All of these factors put together tell me something very, very simple, that it is the responsibility of every working person, a responsibility they have to themselves, to make sure that they are happy in their job.
Somebody that might be listening to this will go something to the effect of, well, that's all well and good. That all makes sense, but I just don't have the skills to go and do something different than what I'm currently doing. What would you say, kind of a recommendation for somebody that may not be, may not have like a college education to where they can have a wider variety of positions to go hunt for? Or is it really more of a different approach on doing your current position that should be focused on for those folks?
Well, that again, another fantastic question, Ray. I mean, the truth of the matter is that there is really no one size fits all. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are many different facets that contribute towards somebody not being happy in their job. Okay. Some of which could be addressed internally, some of which could be just going to that that colleague that you don't get on with, and going and talking to them and saying, hey, listen, we seem to have some kind of personality conflict. Can we figure this out? Okay. Going to their boss, go talking to human resources. Okay. Many times it can be dealt with within. Okay. However, you're quite right. There are many times where it can't be dealt with within, and people need to seek alternatives. Okay. So let me just, if I may, address 1 or 2, fallacies that exist, okay? Mm-hmm. Things that are just patently not true, okay? One of them is, I've been in headhunting and executive recruiting for, excuse me, for nearly 24 years, okay? I started when I was 6, no, I'm kidding. And and in that time, the 2 things, when I've talked about this, that I've heard most commonly have been, well, I can't find anything else, or, well, no one's hiring right now. Okay. Now let's just analyze those in a little bit more detail. Okay. I can't do anything else. Well, everybody has skills that they may not necessarily be using in this particular job that they're in, Okay. Or maybe the skills that they have in this job could be transferred somewhere else, to another job, to another industry, to another organization, to another role. Okay. The amount of times that somebody who happens to be really good at one thing can take those skills and apply them to a different job. Okay. We see in sports the whole time. Okay. You know, people who you only think will be good in one particular position on the field could play in a different position. Okay. It may not be their ideal position, but, you know, they do a perfectly competent job. Okay. So the idea of people not being able to transfer the skills out of the job that they're in simply isn't true. Okay. And the second one, and I'm going to talk about this in a bit more in just a second. Okay. But let me just deal with the other point first. Okay. Which is, people say, well, no one's hiring right now. Let me tell you something. Okay. Everybody is always hiring. Every company is always hiring. Okay. What do you mean? That's crazy. We're in a lockdown. The country's in recession. There's all sorts of economic problems. I don't care. Every company is always hiring. Why? Because every company is hiring the person that can solve the problems they have. And I promise you, every company has problems. Whatever those problems are, whether it's they need to reduce cost, they need to increase revenue, they have a particular problem with their customer services, with their project management, with their marketing, with their fill in the blank. Every company will hire the person that can solve their problems, okay? Which means all anyone that's listening to this podcast needs to do is to determine, right, okay, that company over there that I quite like to work with, I need to figure out what problems they have and determine whether any of those problems are problems I can solve. And eventually they will come up with a company that has a problem that they are uniquely positioned to solve. It's that simple. I know I'm making it sound simple, but it's because it kind of is. Yeah. Okay. Now, the reason why people fall back on these two problems is simply because of something that affects every single one of us. Now, you and I don't know each other that well yet, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you occasionally have this situation. We call it limiting beliefs. Okay. Mm-hmm. We all have it. Okay. It's a little bit like, I've got three kids, right? I love my kids dearly, okay? The one thing that really irritates me about them when they're doing most often their homework is, I can't do it. I need help, okay? I've got a 10-year-old, he's going to be 11 in a couple of weeks, right? Who currently he's in, I really ought to know what grade he's in, but I can't remember. I think it's fourth. And he's doing long division math, okay? And he's doing long divisions, okay? Taking a four-figure number and dividing it by a two-figure number, all right? And I know he can do it, but he doesn't. He doesn't know he can do it. So very, very early in my life, I was a math teacher. So because we're all kind of like doing distance learning at home, I happen to be the head of the math department in Leda Homeschool. Mm-hmm. So my kids come in and my 17-year-old has much more challenging math than my 5-year-old, but my almost 11-year-old comes to me with his long division, and he has the same thing of, I can't do it. And I'm trying to get him to understand, actually he can. And when the penny drops and he realizes, actually he can do it, the whole picture changes. And he goes into, whether it's long division math or very basic algebra or trigonometry or whatever else he's got coming up, the big tipping point is when he realizes he actually can do it. Now, every single one of us at some stage, even as adults, go back to being that 11-year-old where we just think we can't do it, okay? I don't have a college degree. I don't have skills that anyone else will hire me for. I don't know anyone that's hiring. All of those things are the same things that affect my 10-year-old when he's doing long division, that affected my 10-year-old when 9 years ago he struggled to walk. Okay? He talked a lot sooner than he walked. Okay? But eventually he realized, actually, you know what? I really do want to observe the world a little higher up. So I will climb up, and even though I keep falling down, I'll carry on doing it until I get it. And he did, eventually. Okay? Finding another job is no different. Okay? For some people, it's quicker than others. Some people do have more conventionally marketable skills than others. But to every single person, my first boss used to say to me, every lid has a pot. Okay? Every person, if they're not happy where they are, there will be another organization that will hire them. They will solve a problem that another organization has, and they will get hired. It's that simple.
Some of the there's going to be some folks that are listening right now that go, oh, I get that. I understand that. I've heard, like, for example, that most of the time, the want ads don't really net you a job. It really boils down to somebody that you know, that they maybe get you an inroad into whatever place that might be hiring for a person of your skill set. Is there any kind of way to circumvent that or maybe take advantage of it and somehow build that network, especially while we're not able to get out of the house as much with the virus going on? Is there a way to work that to our benefit, even if we don't know people?
You know what? That's such a great question, Ray. It really is. And I'll tell you for why. Okay. So think back to our parents or our grandparents' generation. Okay. Our grandparents' generation, the likelihood is that the people that our grandparents knew were maybe, and whether they lived in a large town, a small town, a big city, the likelihood is that they knew maybe the people that lived either side of them and across the street, mm-hmm. okay? Maybe their family, maybe people that they saw in church or synagogue or in the mosque or now in the house of worship. Maybe the locals that frequented the same bar as them, okay? And that's probably it, okay? We have the advantage of living in an era when networking has never been easier and has never been quicker, okay? Mm-hmm. With the advent of social media and something that we've all become very accustomed to in the last, 10 years? Mm-hmm. It's been a complete game changer, okay? Whether or not you're active on LinkedIn, most people these days are active on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, okay? You're never that far away from a decision maker, from a potential boss or hiring manager in a company you want to work for, or in a company who, having done some research, you identify that, again, you can solve their problems or they'd be the kind of company you'd like to go work for, okay? So you're right that more often than not, companies are hiring through networking, but equally, savvy job seekers will use that very same route to their advantage, okay? And there are some very, very simple ways, and if you'll permit me a moment or two to give you the cliff notes of a masterclass.
Sure.
There are some very, very simple ways to do that. Okay. Something that I, when I'm coaching my executive clients, and these are guys that are at kind of senior VP, global VP or board level, what I coach them in, and we do this over a longer period of time. So I'll just literally be giving you the cliff notes or we'll be here all day, start off by identifying the kind of companies you want to work for. Find those actual companies. Do some research. Take your time to go on, to go online, do your research, and come up with a list of those companies. Then find on LinkedIn who the most likely hiring manager of your position is going to be. So, for example, if you're going for a sales position, look who the VP of sales is. If you're going for a marketing position, who the VP of marketing is, and so on, okay? And it's always worthwhile starting too high because the guy at the top will refer down than it is going too low because it's harder for the guy at the bottom to refer up, okay? Mm-hmm. So look, if you're not sure, always err on the side of height, okay? Then have a look at who those people are. See what they're posting on LinkedIn. See what they're posting on Twitter. Okay. And then like it, reshare it, comment on it. Oh, that was really great. Okay. And then you start to have a dialogue with this individual. Okay. Then and it's a little bit of a slower burn. We're not talking about you'll do that on a Monday on the high or on the Tuesday, okay? But over a period of a couple of weeks, you create familiarity. And then if you know that they're hiring for a position, okay, if you then, having developed a familiarity, you ping this person a private message going, oh, hi, John. Yeah, I've been really liking some of your content. By the way, I did notice that your organization are hiring for a fill in the blank. I'm actually open to considering opportunities right now. Could it be something we could have a conversation about? Or would you mind if I gave you a call just to pick your brains about it? Could, you know, to maybe get some advice from you about it? People love giving advice. People love giving guidance, okay? You'll more often than not get a positive response, okay? Every now and then you might get a go talk to HR, go talk to, yeah, okay, fine, but at least it's an avenue in, okay? I guarantee you that will put you in a more conspicuous footing, which you want, than just being another anonymous resume being sent to a job advertisement, okay? So my advice always will be, yeah, go the conventional route as well, but always do this. Find the companies that you want to work for based on, again, you having the solution to problems they have. Networking online with the person who is most likely to be your next boss if you were to go work for that company. And then find out who they are, like their content, connect eventually after you've liked them, their content two or three times, connect with them. They'll probably accept your connection request, then enter into a dialogue with them. You know, maybe like them on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. And then when the time's right, enter into a dialogue with them. That's absolutely the way I would approach it. And I have to tell you, over the course of the last maybe 4 or 5 years, this approach has yielded far more positive results for my executive clients than waiting reactively for a job to be advertised and then sending in their resume. Going this way, and even a proactive, hey, by the way, I'm looking for a position or I'm open-minded to a position in this and this and this. Is there anyone in your network that you think might be open to hiring someone like me? Well, actually, we're looking for someone like that. Should we have a call? You'll be amazed how often that happens. That's happening with more and more.
I like that. A lot of folks like to think kind of the negative approach is, well, I don't know anybody there. But the positive approach is, well, go learn and meet somebody there. Be intentional and forthright and go directly for it rather than wait for something to happen to you. That makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. And don't let the limiting belief of, well, they won't be interested.
Yeah.
Okay. It's that great thing, isn't it? Where, you know, somebody says, well, why am I if I try and I fail? Why am I if you didn't try and you could have succeeded?
That's true. I like that approach. That that does change your mindset by simply rephrasing it. That makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, think of it as a lottery win. Okay. I have to tell you, I have failed to win the lottery every single time I didn't buy a ticket.
That's true.
With 100% certainty.
And it's good to have that certainty in your life. Unfortunately, it doesn't make you any richer.
Absolutely. And was it Joe DiMaggio said, I missed every single pitch I didn't swing for?
Yep.
It's the same thing, you know? If you're swinging, you miss, at least you swung. And if you swing, at least you've got a chance of hitting it. But if you don't even swing with absolute certainty, you won't hit.
Okay. I like that. It makes it much easier and much more digestible of an approach too. So,
and let's talk numbers. Okay. Let's talk numbers for just a second. Okay. Mm-hmm. So an average conversion rate, Not a great one, not a terrible one, an average conversion rate for a cold email reach out, okay? If you asked any marketer, okay, if you send out 100 cold emails, how many positive responses do you think you'll get? The answer is probably about 4%, plus minus, about 4%, okay? Fine. On LinkedIn, it's actually quite a bit higher. Particularly with in-mails, particularly if you have taken the time to do a little bit of networking. Most people would say, if I've done some networking, you know, the kind of thing I spoke about a moment ago, liking and sharing people's posts, that kind of thing. Typically, a good response would be about 15 to 20%. Okay. So if somebody did this strategy and said, you know what, I'm going to find just 50 companies. Now, anyone that knows anything at all about any industry, the industry they're in, an industry they'd like to go into, they could almost certainly come up with a list of 50 companies. All right. And then come up with a list of 50 people within those 50 companies, one per company, who is likely to be their boss. All right. So 50 people, 20% conversion rate, you're looking at 10 companies that will interview you. Okay. Now, if you ask anyone like me, any headhunter, okay, three interviews equals one job offer, which means if you took the time, if anybody listening to the show right now took the time over the next month to find 50 companies, find their most likely boss in those companies, and just went through a very simple approach of liking and sharing that person's content on LinkedIn, and then doing an email to say, hey, I'm looking, do you know of anything, maybe internally or otherwise? The likelihood is, of those 50 people, 10 will talk to them. And of those 10, they'll talk to them and maybe interview them. You're looking at, let's say of those 10, they're not going to start to talk to you unless they've actually got something to talk to you about. Okay. Of those 10, you're looking at three job offers from doing what? From just sending some messages on LinkedIn. It's basic numbers.
Now, speaking of numbers, that actually kind of leads into another question that I have. Let's just say somebody kind of goes through that approach, and they choose an employer that's interested in them, and they find out that it's not the job that they thought it was, and so they find themselves looking again. And then could that cycle be like a repetitive thing where somebody will think that they've got what they're looking for because they don't really know what they're looking for? When they actually go out hunting for those jobs, they think they know what they're looking for in a position, in a company, and they get there and it's not at all what they think it was. Have you seen that in your job or in your career as a headhunter, as somebody that has, like, they've gone out of their way to find out about a company, they go to work for it, they go, oh no, this isn't at all what I thought it was? Or is it just the opposite? Is it somebody will go and find the job and is like, well, I'm glad I did all that research because this is exactly what I'm looking for?
It's actually very interesting. The truth of the matter is that, first of all, both happen, and they both happen almost always because of one thing. And you mentioned it, and that's research. Uh-huh. Okay. The more research somebody does, the more likely it is that the position that they find turns out to be what they were expecting. Okay. Whether it is let me put it this way, right? Mm-hmm. When a company offers you a position, if until that point you've only spoken to one or two people and it's been a very quick kind of 20, 30 minutes and it's been over the phone or whatever, be very cautious about accepting the position. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you're thinking, great, this was really quick, it was really easy, I'm in, I can leave those vile human beings that I've had to tolerate over the last couple of years, and I can now go to this nirvana, this utopia of my new job. It's all going to be wonderful. Okay. And it was so quick. It's great. They all love me. Aren't I fantastic? Okay. That said, why has it been so? Okay. Why have you only spoken to one or two people? I'm not suggesting necessarily that they were hiding anything. In fact, though, maybe they were. But how on earth can you allow yourself to give, again, remember the numbers, 10 hours a day, every day, to an organization that you've not properly vetted out? Mm-hmm. Okay? Have you really determined exactly what their culture is? Have you really determined what the job's going to be? Have you really determined what the management style of your boss is going to be? Have you really determined the key performance indicators and how realistic they are? Okay, all of the things that make up a job. Have you really, really figured those out? Have you really analyzed them and determined if they're right? Okay. Sometimes people are so committed to leaving, they forget about joining. Okay. Mm-hmm. And to quote Pink Floyd, you know, was it love or was it the idea of being in love? Sometimes it's like, I was so committed to the idea of going to a company, I forgot to actually figure out whether or not this is the company for me. Okay. And it's a mistake so many people make. And sometimes it's because they're just flattered by the fact they've been given a job offer. Sometimes it's just sheer desperation. You know, I'm an employee, get me out of here. All right. but sometimes it's just they were kind of fell head over heels with one particular hiring manager, you know, but I'll tell you something, and it's actually quite sad. There's a guy I know who he worked for about 4 or 5 years for one company, 3 or 4 years for another. I had an impeccable, impeccable resume. Seriously, it was beautiful, right? And he fell out with his boss, and there was a change of management in his company, and it was time for him to leave, all right? So, and he was quite desperate to leave because the company had become a very toxic atmosphere. So he left and joined another organization. And within about 6 weeks, it became very clear, and probably within about 6 hours, but within about 6 weeks, it became very clear that it was a mistake. And he called me and he was like, what do I do? I said, well, leave. Okay. No one's gonna chastise you for one mistake. Okay, but you've got to make sure the next one's right. Okay. And he was like, yeah, you're right. But because he was now even more desperate to leave, he took another job. Okay. Unfortunately, that one didn't work out either. I think that they had a problem with funding or whatever. And he moved again. And he moved to a company in January, I think it was. January or maybe beginning of February of 2020. The company then had to furlough a load of people, and he was let go on last in, first out. Okay, he then struggled for about 6 months to find something. Okay, because there were now a lot of people also chasing, you know, lots of people chasing fewer jobs. Okay, he's now in a situation where he had to significantly kind of club down in terms of the kind of jobs he could go for, because he's now being considered a job hopper. It's like, well, he has 3 jobs in the space of, you know, 9 months or 12 months and didn't work for 6 months. So how good can this guy really be? Oh, you know, it's such a shame that we didn't hire him 2 years ago when he was great. Clearly, something's gone awfully wrong, you know? So now a decent executive headhunter can articulate what's happened and make people understand, hey, the guy just had a run of bad luck, you know? But nonetheless, I've seen these things happen where somebody, through one bad decision, it can just go from, you know, they can just get caught in this almost vicious cycle where, you know, where tragedy begets tragedy.
It sounds a lot like what you're kind of telling us is that when it comes to the job satisfaction, when it comes to your comfort at your work, you have a lot more control over it than you suspect until you actually start applying yourself and doing the research and basically taking more control. You're not going to find that happiness until you put in the effort to better your approach on finding the right place. Am I reading that right?
100%. At the end of the day, life's what you make it. And the more you put into something, the more you'll get out of it. And everybody has a choice. I genuinely believe this. Everybody has a choice whether or not they want to be happy in their job or not, whether or not they want to be happy in their marriage or not, whether they want to be happy in their relationship with their kids or not, with their friends or not. The only area where you have no control ever over whether or not you want to be happy is the relationship you have with your sports team. Because let's be honest, if you went to college in that particular town, or if you were brought up in, you know, a particular city, you know, that sports team you're born into, and if they suck, I'm very sorry, you've got no control over that. And that's the misery that we all, the cross that we all have to bear. Aside from the sports team, every other.
Some folks actually enjoy the fact that their sports team is not that good, so it's still a win for them.
Well, there you go. But aside from that, every other aspect of your life, you have control over. Okay, some people unfortunately have physical pain and have, you know, clinical illnesses. Obviously, I'm not including that, but I'm talking about areas where the biggest obstruction to satisfaction or happiness is apathy. Okay. People just not doing enough about it because they just believe either A, they can just or should just tolerate it, or B, that there's nothing they can do about it, which just comes back to our concept of limiting beliefs that we talked about earlier. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, everybody has control over how happy they are in their job, simply because it's also worth remembering that however important your job is to you, I can absolutely tell you, you as an employer, as an employee, are important to your employer. They need you to do your job. Otherwise, you wouldn't be there. Okay? People, this really surprises me. Okay? People think they've got to pussyfoot around their employers and have to mind their P's and Q's, as my grandmother used to say, around their employers, because if they don't, if they do the wrong thing, they'll get fired. If they make any trouble, they'll get fired. If they insist on having better working conditions or not being mistreated or addressing the toxicity of their relationship, they'll get fired. Okay. I have to tell you, if your position was that precarious and you were that much of a luxury to your employer that at a whim they would fire you, you wouldn't be there. Okay. The way that companies structure themselves is that everybody needs to be there. Otherwise, they wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you're not happy, it behooves your employer, not just for your sake, but for theirs, to do something about it. Okay. If you're the guy who, and no disrespect to whoever this analogy might apply to, but if you're the guy whose job it is to sweep the floor in the supermarket, okay, your employer needs that floor swept. That's why you're there. Don't think of yourself as, I'm just the lowly floor sweeper, okay? The floor needs to be swept. That's why you're there. If they could get away with not hiring you, they would. They can't. That's why you have a job, okay? It doesn't matter whether you are sweeping the floor or you are marketing the company. It doesn't matter whether you clean the washroom or own the boardroom. You have a your company needs you to be there, okay? And so how happy you are or otherwise is an intrinsic part of their relationship with you. And for the most part, most companies want their employees to be happy. Now, it could be that the reason why you're not happy is because you're just not enjoying the job. Okay. No disrespect to your employer. Your employers are great people. You love your team. You love your boss. He's a great guy. You just don't enjoy the work. Okay. And that's something you would need to address, and maybe there's nothing they can do about it. They can't necessarily say, well, you know, I mean, for example, if let's say you just get to a point in your life where you don't want to carry heavy stuff around, if you work as a postal worker for the United States Postal Service, it doesn't matter how great your team are, if you don't want to be out there lugging bags of mail around, there's not really much you can do about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe you enjoyed it in your 20s, you're now in your 50s, you don't want to do it anymore. Okay. That's not, so job dissatisfaction isn't necessarily about breakdown of relationships or one party doing anything wrong to the other. It could just be that either you don't enjoy the work or have grown not to enjoy the work. That's fine, but it doesn't delegitimize your responsibility to yourself to do something about it. Okay. And it is in your control Okay. Because if your company is hiring you, you can bet every dollar in your pocket that there's another company that will want to hire.
All right. Well, that's it's actually very inspiring, and it's an enjoyable take on how you can control what's going on around you, especially after a year of so many folks being holed up, maybe working from home, maybe not having a position. It's kind of inspiring to know and to hear from somebody that actually does this for a living that you can, when you apply yourself, you can make those opportunities for yourself along the way. So tell us a little bit more about you, your roles at Headhunter, and maybe some of your projects that people can find out more about you personally on.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. So I am a headhunter. I've been a headhunter for 24 years. Mm-hmm. I did 4 years working for a smaller headhunting firm, and then I spent another 4 years working for a bigger one. And then started my own thing, co-founded Silesia Human Capital back in 2005. We started off in Manchester, England. We then grew and opened up an office here in Las Vegas, Nevada, because I wanted something exactly the same as Manchester, England. Yeah, all the palm trees and in Manchester, there you go. So if anyone's been to Manchester, England, you'll know that I jest. So Silesia focuses on executive headhunting, particularly within the software and security industries. Aside from Silesia Human Capital, we also opened Silesia Academy, which is a training and coaching firm. Specifically to help people really who want to address their job satisfaction, really kind of to do something about all the stuff that we've talked about here. And we have a particular product that I think may well be very, very helpful for anyone that's listening to this that is intrigued and would like to understand a little bit more. I would urge them to go to Career Accelerator, which is a product that we have. Or alternatively, if you want something a little easier to digest, then they can look for the Ultimate Job Hunting Toolkit. So just no W's, just go ultimatejobhuntingtoolkit.com. And that's a fantastic compendium of all the tools you would need to do all of the things that we talked about before, okay? Everything from creating a great resume, figuring out what it is you want to do, all the way through to identifying the companies you want to work for, tracking all of that dialogue that we talked about. And remember, all you need are 50 companies. If you have dialogue with 50 companies, you'll get 3 job offers, okay? And this whole thing really helps people to do it. And at last check, I think we were selling for like $36. So it's a very, very, very modest investment for people. So if you want to go to ultimatejobhuntingtoolkit.com, it's all there for you. In addition, we will be launching a platform that's going to encapsulate everything about career development. Whether you are actively looking for a new job, you are open but not that bothered, or you're perfectly happy where you are and want to develop your skills internally within the organization you're in, we're launching a new platform that's going to address all of these things. The platform is called Pivot Lane. And so just go to www.pivotlane, P-I-V-O-T-L-A-N-E, pivotlane.com, which I think is going to be a phenomenal resource. We're currently at pre-launch, but if you go on there, you can register. I think for our pre-reg customers, we're going to give like a lifetime discount. So it's definitely worth having a look at that. And if I can plug one final thing,
sure.
Like you, Ray, I am extremely lucky to be able to chat with some extraordinary people on my own podcast, which is The Conference Room. So if you go to either theconferenceroompodcast.com or just look for The Conference Room on Spotify or iTunes or really any platform where you see where you listen to podcasts, theconferenceroom.com is a great place to be. And hopefully, Ray, you'll be kind enough to come and guest on my podcast at some stage in the future.
I'll see what I can do. First, I'm going to try some of these things out and see if I can be a success story for you. And then I'll have something to talk about. But Simon, it's been a blast. I greatly appreciate you coming on here, sharing your skills and your knowledge, and giving some folks out there that may be looking a little bit of hope and a lot of direction. So thank you so much for sharing with us.
It's been a genuine pleasure, Ray. Thanks so much for having me on.
And once again, as I always do, a challenge now to folks that are listening. If you also have a subject that you're passionate about, like Simon is, and you can speak with some authority on it, and you're not afraid to tackle some tough questions that might come your way, then I'd like to talk with you here on Unsensitive. So reach out to us through the Fearscape Media Network, or you can write me directly at rayrobwrites@gmail.com. And then maybe you'll be the next guest on my show. Special thanks to Ben Sounds for the use of the song Happy Rock. And of course, the fine folks at Fearscape for giving me a platform. And thank you for listening to Unsensitive. We'll talk again soon. And until then, keep your mind open.